Women in Love by D.H. Lawrence. Ursula and Gudrun Brangwen sat one morning in the window bay of their father's house in Beldover. "Ursula," said Gudrun, "don't you really want to get married?" "I don't know," she replied. "It depends how you mean. I might, but I'm not sure." Gudrun paused, slightly irritated. She wanted to be quite definite. "You don't think one needs the experience of having been married?" she asked. "Well, do you think it needs to be an experience?" replied Ursula. "Bound to be in some way or another," said Gudrun coolly. "Possibly undesirable, but bound to be an experience of some sort."
"Not really," said Ursula.
"More likely to be the end of an experience." Gudrun sat very still to attend to this. She almost angrily took up her rubber and began to rub out part of her drawing. Ursula stitched absorbedly. "You wouldn't consider a good offer?" asked Gudrun.
"I think I've rejected several."
"Really? But weren't you frightfully tempted?"
"In the abstract, but not in the concrete," said Ursula. "When it comes to the point, one isn't even tempted."
"Oh, if I were tempted, I'd marry like a shot."
"I'm only tempted not to."
The faces of both the sisters suddenly lit up with amusement. "Isn't it an amazing thing," cried Gudrun, "how strong the temptation is not to?" They both laughed, looking at each other. In their hearts they were frightened. The sisters were women, Ursula 26 and Gudrun 25, but both had the remote, virgin look of modern girls. Gudrun was very beautiful, passive, soft-skinned, soft-limbed. Her look of confidence and diffidence contrasted with Ursula's sensitive expectancy. The provincial people, intimidated by Gudrun's perfect sang-froid and exclusive bareness of manner, said of her, "She's a smart woman." She'd just come back from London, where she'd spent several years working at an art school as a student and living a studio life. "I was hoping now for a man to come along," Gudrun said.
"So you've come home expecting him here?" Ursula said, laughing.
"Oh, my dear, I wouldn't go out of my way to look for him. But if there did happen to come along a highly attractive individual of sufficient means, well," she tailed off ironically,
"don't you find yourself getting bored? Don't you find that things fail to materialise? Nothing materialises. Everything withers in the bud."
"It does frighten one," said Ursula, and again there was a pause.
"But do you hope to get anywhere by just marrying?"
"It seems to be the inevitable next step," said Gudrun.
Ursula pondered this with a little bitterness. She was a class mistress herself in Willie Green Grammar School, as she had been for some years. The two sisters worked on in silence, Ursula having always that strange brightness of an essential flame that is caught, meshed, contravened. Still, she had a strange prescience, an intimation of something yet to come. She laid down her work and looked at her sister. She admired Gudrun with all her soul. "How do you find home, now you've come back to it?" she asked. Gudrun paused for some moments. Then, in a cold, truthful voice, she said, "I find myself completely out of it." They worked on again in silence for some time. Gudrun's cheek was flushed with repressed emotion.
"Shall we go out and look at that wedding?" she asked at length.
"Yes!" cried Ursula too eagerly, leaping up as if to escape something. And as she went upstairs, Ursula was aware of the house, of her home round about her, and she loathed it, the sordid, too familiar place. Her feeling frightened her.
The two girls were soon walking swiftly down the main street of Beldover.
"It's like a country in an underworld," said Gudrun.
They drew away from the colliery region, over the curve of the hill, into the purer country of the other side, towards Willie Green. They passed down the high road towards the church. There, in the lowest bend of the road, stood a little group of expectant people waiting to see the wedding. The daughter of the chief mine owner of the district, Thomas Crich, was getting married to a naval officer. The two sisters held themselves tense and went towards the schoolyard from where they were to watch. Punctually at 11 o'clock, the carriages began to arrive. There was a stir in the crowd. Wedding guests were mounting up the steps and passing along the red carpet. They were all gay and excited because the sun was shining. Gudrun watched them closely. There was none that had anything unknown, unresolved, until the Crichs themselves began to appear. Then her interest was piqued. There came the mother, Mrs. Crich, with her eldest son, Gerald. She was a queer, unkempt figure. She looked like a woman with a monomania, heavily proud. Her son was of a fair, suntanned type, well-made and almost exaggeratedly well-dressed. But about him also was the strange, guarded look. Gudrun lighted on him at once. There was something northern about him that magnetized her. He looked so new, pure as an Arctic thing. Perhaps he was 30 years old, perhaps more. His gleaming beauty, maleness, like a young, good-humoured, smiling wolf, did not blind her to the significant, sinister stillness in his bearing. "Good God!" she exclaimed to herself. "What is this?" And then a moment afterwards she was saying assuredly, "I shall know more of that man." The bridesmaids were here, and yet the bridegroom had not come. One of the chief bridesmaids she knew, a tall, slow, reluctant woman with a weight of fair hair and a pale, long face. This was Hermione Radice, a friend of the Crichs. Ursula watched her with fascination. She was a woman of the new school, full of intellectuality. She had various intimacies of mind and soul with men of capacity. Ursula knew among these men only Rupert Birkin, who was one of the school inspectors of the county. Gudrun had met Hermione twice, but they did not take to each other. Hermione knew herself to be the social equal, if not far the superior, of anyone she was likely to meet in Willey Green. She was a Kulturtrager, a medium for the culture of ideas. And yet her soul was tortured. She craved for Rupert Birkin. If only Birkin would form a close and abiding connection. He fought her off. The more she strove to bring him to her, the more he battled her back. And they had been in love now for years. He would be at this wedding. He was to be the groom's man. But the bridegroom and the groom's man had not yet come. There was growing consternation outside. And here was the bride's carriage adorned with ribbons and cockades. The father stepped out first into the air of the morning like a shadow. Then there was a sudden foaming rush, and the bride appeared like a sudden surf rush, floating all white beside her father in the morning shadow of trees, her veil flowing with laughter. And no bridegroom had arrived. It was intolerable for Ursula. She felt almost responsible. There was a carriage. It had just come into sight. Yes, it was he. The carriage rattled down the hill and drew near. The bride turned round gaily to see her lover dropping out of the carriage and dodging among the horses. "Tibbs!" she cried. He glanced up and saw the bride, hesitated for a moment, then he gathered himself together for a leap to overtake her. "Ah!" came her strange, intaken cry. She started, turned and fled towards the church. Like a hound, the man was after her. Cries and exclamations burst from the crowd. And then Ursula noticed the figure of Rupert Birkin, who was helping old Mr. Crich up the path. Birkin was as thin as Mr. Crich, pale and ill-looking. His figure was narrow, but nicely made. Although he was dressed correctly for his part, yet there was an innate incongruity. His nature was clever and separate. Yet he subordinated himself to the common idea, travestied himself. The two men were gone, and there was nothing more to see. But Ursula was left thinking about Birkin. She wanted to know him. "What do you think of Rupert Birkin?" she asked, a little reluctantly, of Gudrun.
I think he's attractive, but what I can't stand about him is his way with other people, his way of treating any little fool as if she were his greatest consideration, just because he has no real critical faculty. Of people, at any event, said Gudrun. It's such an insult.
Oh, it is. One must discriminate.
The sisters sat silent, waiting for the wedding party to come out. They listened for their father's playing on the organ. He would enjoy playing a wedding march. Now the married pair were coming. The bells were ringing. Ursula wondered if the trees and flowers could feel the vibration. Birkin appeared with Hermione. Gerald Critch came alone with a great reserve of energy, a strange stealth glistening through his happy appearance. Gudrun rose sharply and went away. She wanted to be alone to know this strange, sharp inoculation that had changed the whole temper of her blood. A school day was drawing to a close, and Ursula stood in front of the class, leading the children by questions to understand the structure and meaning of the catkins. This day had gone by, like so many more, in an activity that was like a trance. Ursula often wondered what she waited for. This was a whole life. Sometimes she had periods of tight horror when it seemed to her that her whole life would pass away and be gone without having been more than this. But she never really accepted it. Her spirit was active, her life like a shoot that is growing steadily, but which has not yet come above ground. Brattleby was a Georgian house with Corinthian pillars standing among the softer, greener hills of Derbyshire, not far from Cromford. Of late, Hermione had lived a good deal at the house. The summer was just coming in when Ursula and Gudrun went to stay a second time with Hermione. The motor car ran down the hill and up again in one breath, and they were curving to the side door. A parlourmaid appeared, and then Hermione kissed them, looked them up and down, and led them into the house. Lunch was served on the lawn under the great tree, and there were present also a young Italian woman, an athletic-looking Miss Bradley, a learned dry baronet of 50, Sir Joshua, Rupert Birkin, and a woman secretary, Fräulein Martz. The food was very good, but Ursula, in spirit, was unhappy. The talk was always slightly sententious, the attitude mental and very wearying. After luncheon, they all had a heated discussion on the benefits of education, and before they all realised it, the afternoon had passed, and the maid appeared with tea. After tea, they were all gathered for a walk. Birkin only refused. "Why not?" sang Hermione's question. "Because I don't like trooping off in a gang." "Then we'll leave a little boy behind if he's sulky." And she trailed off to the rest of the company for their walk around the park. After a successful walk, they all gathered for dinner. Hermione came down strange and sepulchral. The rest of the party was gay and extravagant in appearance. Everybody had put on evening dress, except Birkin and Joshua Matheson. Dinner was dull, and only enlivened by Hermione insisting on the women performing a wild ballet dance. On completion of the dancing, they all drifted to bed. The house being full, Gerald was given the smaller room, communicating with Birkin's bedroom. Birkin went straight to bed. He was feeling happy and sleepy. But Gerald would talk to him. "Who are those two Brangwins?" Gerald asked.
"They live in Beldover."
"In Beldover? Who are they, then?"
"Teachers in the grammar school."
"They are. Class barriers are breaking down."
"I don't suppose you'll see very much of Gudrun. She's a restless bird."
"How do you know her so well?"
"I knew her in London. I've known her for 2 years, I suppose."
Then he added rather fretfully, "But go to bed, Gerald. God knows what time it is."
"All right, then," said Gerald, and he laid his hand affectionately on the other man's shoulder and went away.